glad to be amongst you again after 3.5 months. We are all children of God. God is our light, and we are also light, being children of light. But our light is enveloped by so many coverings, and we are identified in the covering so much so, with the covering so much so, that we have forgotten ourselves. The cause of identification is the attention, which is the expression of our soul. They are, through the outgoing faculties, diffused in the outside world. So we have got, as a man, this man body, a very wonderful house in which we live in. This is considered to be the highest in all creation, and all masters spoke very highly about it. They said, it is next to God. We are divine in nature. We are spirit in man. As spirit is eternal, we are also eternal. Why we fear that we will die? But this greatness of our own, which is innate in us, we have forgotten. So all masters say, well, just realize the Godhood in you, which already exists. You have not to put in from outside. When a master meets, he does not put in anything from outside within you. He simply, your attention, which is the expression of soul and diffused in the world, helps you to withdraw from outside and come to its source, which is our own soul, at the back of the eyes, where our soul is withdrawn from the body and go to the back, where? To the back of the eyes at the time of death. If we can do that, well, we realize that we are no other than God. So when the masters come, they say, we are in a very pitiable state. We are living in a house where so many outgoing faculties are working. They were meant to serve us. But unfortunately, they, instead of serving us, they are having control over us. They are dragging us like anything. Take the outgoing faculty of sight. Ever since we are born, from that date onward till this time, we have been, our attention has been diffused through the eyes to the outside things. So many impressions we have been receiving through the eyes, they are counted to be about 80%. And some are coming from other outgoing faculties. Next comes the audition. And the remaining, that is about 14% from the ears. The remaining 6% come through other outgoing faculties. So now what happens, you see, when you see something, we are attracted like anything. We receive impressions through the eyes, through the ears, and from other sources as well. So much so that our subconscious reservoir is overflowing with the impressions we have been receiving all through life. When even we go to dreams, they react there. You see. So if we know how to withdraw or liberate ourselves from the outgoing faculties, there is some hope. But our soul is first under the control of mind. Soul and mind have become one. They are called jiva. Soul is eternal. As I told you before, being one substance only, consciousness, but coming in contact with mind, it has become the dua. So both combined, being dragged to the outside things, through the outgoing faculties, we are identified with them so much so that we have left no idea of our own self. We are souls, not mind too. Take the example of water. It is made of two gases, oxygen and hydrogen. Oxygen, you know, is life-giving. When a man is dangerously sick, they say, well, I'll give him a cylinder of oxygen cylinder. You see. And hydrogen gas, chokes our throat. Two different things when combined together form water, the quality of which is different from the two. Similarly, we are eternal spirit in man. Combined with mind, we have become the doers, and whatever we sow, so shall we reap. So Master say, be still. What they meant? Physically and intellectually. Then you will know that no other than the God within you. So this is the true state of affairs, you might say, in which we are going. We do not know how to liberate ourselves. Outgoing faculties are so strong that in spite of our wishing it, we cannot do it. When we become helpless and we cry, what does it happen? We are souls, as I told you, children of God. God is our true father. He sees my child as unhappy. He himself cannot, after himself, come up to me, cannot be liberated. When a man is himself bound hand and foot, how can he open? Lose himself from that binding. There must be somebody who is not bound. A bound man cannot unbound the other man. So you'll find somebody is required who has unbound himself. He has withdrawn his attention from the outside things, and the control that the outgoing faculties had on it, liberated it, then analyzed from mind, then man knows I've got the same God. And further, it is environed by so many casings, you might say, coverings, that is physical, astral, causal, supercausal, Allah liberate all these things we can adore, truly speaking, about our own self, although we begin to see. When we first withdraw from outside and rise from this iron curtain of the physical body, we see we are not the physical body. There, that Godhood begins to shine within us. We become conscious of it. And as we progress further, we liberate from the astral causal coverings, we become more and more conscious of that, until we become one. Because after all, we are light. When light is just analyzed from all other things, naturally light is absorbed in the grand light. Just take the example of a candle. You see? When it is burning, put it straight, the flame will go up. Even you put it, you know, downward, even then the flame will go up. So our soul being light, you see, they always try to go to the source, great source of light, which is called God. That God which came into expression, all scriptures tell us, when God wished, there was low, there was light. So we are spark of that light, you see. So you'll find we have got this man body, a wonderful house in which we live in. Here God gave us servants to help us, but they are revolting. They, instead of following us, obeying us, they are dragging us outside. And what things come in the way, you see, to which our this outgoing faculties drag us, they are players. To whom? To the soul plus mind, the dua, which is called jiva. So unless we get more bliss and jaya than what we are having now, we cannot leave the outside things. So God has made arrangement, you see. Outside things, players which drag us, they can be divided in two parts. One very beautiful scenery, beautiful things. When you see any beautiful scenery, any beautiful thing, our attention is drawn. And the second, when we hear very sweet symphonies of the music, we are drawn like anything. These all two outside two things are the potent things which drag us outside. So God has more bliss, more happiness, more joy, more sweet symphonies of the music of the spheres. All glory and beauty lies within us. Only if we know how to withdraw from outside. We've got a great treasure within us. God is a hidden treasure with all beauty, with all sweet symphonies within us, but we do not know how to be invert, withdraw from outside and enjoy that. This is state of affairs we are in. As a man, we are all one. Now, just take the example of a house where the mistress is there, and there are 10 servants given to help her, and they revolt. Instead of obeying, they are disobeying everything. Now what will be the fate of the house? Everything topsy-turvy. If the servants are obeying, the house will be clean, everything will be set in order. Even in darkness you go, you will see what is what. Otherwise, what happens? The tables are upturned, there is no way out, it is all darkness, all already. You pass on, you just stumble over one thing, just fall the other way, there is no light to see. So that is it. Two conditions we are having, you see. So Master tell us, first of all, how to control, have control over this outgoing faculty. They tell us. Not only tell us, but demonstrate to us how to withdraw, how to give you a contact with all beauty, all glory which is within you, maybe for a while, when you begin to have it the very first day, how to withdraw from outside. First thing, that is difficult. As I told you, we are so much outer impressions within us overflowing, that even in dream those come out in the form of dream. Naturally, when you sit in meditation, that is something coming out of which you never dream of it. But those are the impressions which you have been receiving all through life, unconnected. So that is the first difficulty that we have. For that, Master come, they tell us where you get these impressions, how to control it, how to stop to receive impressions from outside. Then, first thing is to enter this house. These, I tell you honestly, the servants had bound the mistress, you see. One dragging this side, the other dragging that way. Result is all houses topsy-turvy in the darkness in the house. So when you come to your master, what does he do? He, since he gives you this teaching, demonstrates it, how to withdraw. First your attention from outside, first enter in the laboratory of the man body, and then how to liberate from the outgoing faculties or senses and rise above it for a while and give you contact with him. Of whom? God. What is God? God is light. God is life. God is love. You see that. You are given some experience of light, little or more. We feel consciousness. We feel a little separate from the body. We begin to see. Now we say it is my body, but we do not see, differentiate it practically. Then really we say, oh well, this is something else, like a coat to be taken off, to be put off. And naturally, God is love and love. We are drops of the ocean of all love. Naturally, love is innate in us. That sprouts forth. And as it comes in contact with that God into expression power, which is light and sound principle, it overflows. So this is state of affairs. This is the disease, you might say, or the affairs that we have to set right. For this purpose, we have done various schools of thought. Religions are means to the end. They are the schools of thought in which you have joined. Who are we? We are children of light. Just under the control of mind and outgoing faculties, we are identified with body and outside things so much so that we have forgotten our own self. What to speak of that great power which is controlling each one of us in the man body. Otherwise, we could have run away out of it. We cannot. Their eyes, two eyes open, two ears open, two nostrils open, mouth is there. But we cannot run away out of it. That's a controlling power within us. So for a while, when some master comes, what is it? I mean the function of a master. And what is he? He's a man like you. Of course, outwardly. He's got the same two eyes, two ears, two hands, two feet. He talks like you. He is also to maintain the body. it does other functions of the world too, but he is conscious of the divine nature. He is conscious co-worker with the divine plan. Although he works at the level of man to help them as a man. So, this is what we have to overcome. For schools of thought or religions were made for the purpose to solve this mystery of life. To be out of this entanglement, you see, or this, what you say, obliviousness altogether. We do not know who we are. A little child knows better than us. You ask him who you are, he opens his eyes, opens his mouth, he feels somewhere here. As he grows in years older, he asks him, he says, I am Mr. Such and Such. Further he says, I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am a Mohammedan. Again further, I am American, I am French, I am a German, I am Indian. Who is he? He is conscious being, you see. That we have forgotten. We go so far away from our own selves that we have forgotten our own selves. So masters come tell us, they address us either as a man, from the level of a man, O man, awake, or from the level of the soul, conscious being, O children of light, awake. You are asleep. Being under the control of mind, your attention is diffused into the world and identified outside. You are awakened outside and asleep from within. And God power is already within you, awaiting for you. Your true home is the true home of your Father. That is of all consciousness, all wisdom. Why are you stuck fast in this material world and the outside things? These are only temporarily given to you. Body is changing, being made of matter every moment of life. This is a golden opportunity which has been given to us to realize ourselves, to know ourselves, and then know the controlling power which is controlling us in the body and controlling all universe. All masters say like that, of course in their own language, which was prevalent at the time when they came. By parallel study of religion you'll find this. These religions were made just to liberate us from all these outer entanglements, to know ourselves and to know God. These were means to the end, that school and college is creditable from where many students get degrees. But we have joined those very things. We have forgotten the goal. We simply identify ourselves as one religion, belonging to one religion or the other. Or one country or the other. There have been religious wars, there have been patriotic wars, in which thousands and millions were killed, and are being killed. Masters, when they come, they give us teaching from this level, universal level. They consider all children of God, you see, as brothers and sisters in God. Because we are maintained, controlled by that high power. So this is the true state of affairs we are going through. So in whatever religion you are, that religion to remain there is a blessing. But to not to attain, achieve this lost godhood, well, you are still bound. So for that purpose, Master tell us what to do. As I told you, the story goes that in the old religions, I mean, of the Hindu scriptures, There was one very learned pandit or the minister, I must say Hindu, and there was a King Prichat. King Prichat he was called. He used to read out the scriptures day to day, every day morning in the court. And the scriptures say, those who hear the scriptures and act, they are liberated. Liberation is not something to be had after death, but it is to be seen now, whether you are liberated or not. So many times those scriptures were read out from day to day, month to month. One day, that King Prichat sat down and thought over it. Well, I have read in scriptures, whoever hears these scriptures, he is just liberated once for all. But I am bound. Mine is very like a magistrate, you see, tells you where you are bound. If you leave it to him, it is just true. He told the minister, well, look here, I have heard this scripture so many times, again I give you a chance to have read the whole of the scripture again, from one end to the other, and after that, if I am not liberated, you will be put to death. What happened? In 7 days, the scriptures were read over throughout, and the last day, he came home, well, lied down in despair, tomorrow is the day of my death. His daughter was very wise, you see. Sometimes, daughters are very wise. He asked, father, why are you so sad? Well, dear daughter, I am to be put to death tomorrow. Why? Because it is laid in scriptures, whoever reads these scriptures, and they call it, they naturally are liberated. Then I know, King is not liberated, nor I am liberated. Well, I must be put to death tomorrow. There is no escape from that. And the doctor told him, all right, I will go to the king tomorrow morning and just question him. She went next morning. King asked, why have you come, doctor? Well, I have come to just reply to your question, what you put to my father. What? You're not here. Let us go to the wilderness, all around, you and I. And she also sent for her father too, and got also 2 ropes. He tied with one tree, the king, and the other, with the other, his own father. Both were bound with the tree. She came to her father, told, father, will you kindly unbound the king over there? He says, well, I'm bound already, how can I? Then if she went to the king, well, king, would you kindly unbound my father? Oh, foolish girl, don't you think I am bound? How can a bound man can unbound the other one? And that is all she wanted, you see. And this is what is happening. We are bound hand and foot by the outgoing faculties. We do not know our own self how to liberate. How can we liberate others? This is a practical question of unbinding oneself. So to read scriptures is not sufficient, mind that. To hear the scriptures is also not sufficient. But there must be somebody who can practically demonstrate how to withdraw from outside for a while, how to rise above these shackles of outgoing faculties, open our inner eye, give a contact within, maybe little or no. And once we do it again and again by regular practice, we will succeed. If at first you don't succeed, then try again. This is what the master does. To give a lecture, to tell you how to say prayers, how to perform certain rites and rituals, that any man can do it after a little time. How to act in pose, how to laugh, how to cry. No. But this is a practical question. Who knows it, who has that experience, is competent, He will give you some experience to start with, maybe a little more. And what is wanted there? He wants, be still.
Good evening and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was the first 30 minutes of a talk entitled The Birthright to be God. It was given on January 19, 1964, in Washington, D.C. Our reader this evening is David Halliburton. Hello, David.
Hi, Christine. Hello, everyone. This evening, I'm going to read something written by Master Kirpal in the 1950s called Sant, the Master. It was published in the October 1970 Sat Sandesh and as Chapter 5 in The Way of the Saints. Perhaps one might ask, what sort of a person is a sant, about whom so much has been said, as distinguished from commonly known grades of masters, such as sannyasis, rishis, munis, tikishwars, munishwars, yogishwars, past masters, founders and ministrants of religions, etc. No doubt a sant, or sadhu, is an ordinary man to all external appearances. He is, however, a great deal more. A perfect man, with experience of outer and inner life. Outer living may be different in different countries, but inner experiences, wherever known, are the same. Although they speak of differing phases according to the degree of inner approach. These are not denied as far as they go, but direct and full phases are announced by sants who also offer experience along with their theory. What more is needed by man? Voluminous books recording experiences of sants in this science of nature are full of their praises. Still, it is very difficult to know more about a sant, even if he is your nearest neighbor or daily passes you on the same road. History shows that once the Tsar of Russia, moved by the fate of certain exiled subjects of his dominion, working as shipbuilders, laborers on a far-off coast, went in disguise to them, worked with them for a number of years, and persuaded them to return to their homes. The laborers protested that they had been turned out of the dominion, and there was no hope for them. The Tsar assured them that he had influence with the royal court, including some with the Tsar, and that there would be no trouble. Those who believed him agreed to accompany him to their homes. On the way, their faith in their fellow worker was confirmed when the Tsar, disguised as a laborer, was warmly greeted by his men. At last, when all saw in the end that the distinguished laborer was none other than the Tsar himself sitting on the throne before their eyes, they heaved sighs of relief. How could they have known him or believed him before? The unseen High One uses a very selected human pole, who, by dint of his continued, untiring, and unending endeavors, unequaled in self-sacrifice and boundless love for him during life, contacts him, God, within himself, becomes his conscious co-worker, and is utilized and assigned the mission of giving solace to afflicted seekers of him, to rescue them from the worries of the world, and to unite all such ones to him who owns them. Man needs man to understand. And so, Asant is the High One in the guise of a man, to whom those longing for him can approach. The unseen Almighty has his own law in this respect. Thus, Sant is God plus man. He is a mouthpiece of God, or, if one is pleased to accept it, he is God in person, personified God. He is a most sacred personal God, invested with all powers and authority, and is a living altar to pray to seek solution of man's problems from birth to death and after, in short, to extricate man from the network of worries and bestow true salvation. One might feel aversion at this expression, personal God, but if one thinks deeply, he will realize that holy personalities in every religion were men in physical bodies, duly contacted with the High Lord, and advised, healed, or talked of the Holy Father only as Savior from sin and giver of salvation. God has no co-sharer, is the general belief, and as such God, through the selected human poll, spoke each time, and not man. The divine science brings to light this important fact, and has more respect for all such personalities and their teachings than any religious circles today. Sant Tulsi Sahib of Hathras, once accompanied by some of his devoted disciples, visited a fair in the locality there. Among some visitors who gathered as inquirers and seekers around him happened to be a queen, Tara Mati by name, who, leaving her state carriage at a distance, came for darshan of Holy Tulsi Sahib. Casting a glance over the thousands of people in the fair, Tulsi Sahib uttered a few words. If anyone or the whole multitude comes to me and says that they want to see the true Lord on high, I will take them to him just now. Queen Tara Mati, who heard him, stepped forward with folded hands and said, "Please, take me to him, O Holy One." She sat with eyes closed on the ground and was given the experience right there on the spot. When she came back into the physical body from the high regions and opened her eyes, she said, "You were on the high seat of the great Lord. Why did you not tell me so before?" Tulsi Sahib replied, "You would not have believed me then." Thus, God moves as ordinary man in disguise. As a man externally, no one can recognize him. But only one who contacts a master saint within himself, according to the science, that is, the laws that he has laid down for man, externally, if one takes a master saint as an ordinary man, he cannot derive any more benefit from him than he could from anyone of the level that he takes him for. If one takes him as a superman, much more benefit can be derived, and if he is taken as all in all, still more. If one contacts a master within himself, he gets all and everything. It is not a matter of one's thinking range, which is blind faith. It depends on the extent of understanding of this divine science. That which comes from the heart will go to the heart. A question was once put to Hazur Balasawan Singh Ji Maharaj. Bodies of all men are made of the same mud, that is, material flesh, blood, etc. What superiority is attached to the physical body of a sant, which makes him superior to any other man? Hazur replied, "No doubt, all bodies are composed of mud, but the body of a sant is made of the purest particles of it available in the universe. Every word, every look, every move, every touch, even the aura of a sant is endowed with mercy, love, and grace of God. His society is specially electrified and the atmosphere charged. The purer the heart of a man, the more he realizes and feels. Even those who listen to him, accept and absorb what he says, are not left blank. They are benefited. When a sant walks on the ground, the land becomes pure and sacred. When he walks over the grass, or in walking, crushes any worms or insects, they get a man's body direct, irrespective of the cyclic order and stages of evolution of creation of life on earth in nature's science. The fruit trees and plants from which the cereal comes, which a sant uses in his diet, also get human bodies directly. The tree, a portion of a branch of which the sant uses as his toothbrush, and the cows who provide milk for the sants, also get the man's body direct. Similarly, the mares and other animals that sants ride, the ants or worms whose bodies touch the flowing water in which a sant bathes, or any flying bird who happens to see the naked portion of the body of a sant, also get the same advantage. An ordinary man would take this as an enigma or joke, and would hardly be prepared to believe, because his testing stone is his intellect, and he knows nothing of the power of God, or such powers delegated to, or concessions inherent in the bodies of sants, unless he acquires experience in the noble science that has been designed by God himself for man. It is true that God is unseen to external eyes, but he has not left man all forlorn on earth, so far as approach to him is concerned. The door of approach, the starting point for any search or research in this connection, lies within man. The sant is the means. Man, therefore, must adopt a course different from that upon which he is attempting to make headway. But, proud of his learning in many fields, he goes astray, just as one examining a bowl found in the ruins of a far-off country begins to ponder, speculate, and concentrate his imaginings on the potter who made it long ago. He draws a sketch of the potter in his mind, makes images of him and his implements, and in so doing writes books, one after the other, trying to impress others and prove that his findings are true and deserve praise. Alas, man is far from the right track. Simple is truth, and still simpler the language of truth spoken by the Sants, whose simple and brief words uttered from the heart satisfy, pacify, and console the most bewildered and troubled souls. They speak involuntarily and unaffectedly. From Maulana Rumi we have, a sant is the mouthpiece of God, and God himself speaks through the human throat. As a man, a sant is always submissive to his will in happenings in life. Bear and forbear is a sant's creed. He is like a sandalwood tree on which a feller's axe strikes its blows, but the tree continues to give forth its fragrance, even to the edge of the blade which cuts it. In the company of a sant, the agitated mind becomes still. He stands for the good of man and does his work as a friend or brother, if one's mind is not prepared to accept him as a guide. He remains concealed, but by his very concealment is added fame to fame and glory to glory. A sant will never say that he is a sant. Hazur, when he was told that he was true Guru Nanak, used to say openly before thousands in satsang that he did not bear any likeness, even to the dogs of Guru Nanak. This humility places sants above the level of the highest cultivated human beings, who are often prey to egotism. It is the summit of merits of sants as men. Concealment is the essential attribute of sants. It is inherent in their character. God is concealed and prefers to remain so from the external view of man. This law is from the High One, for whose bodies in which the Lord is pleased to work. Disregard of this divine law results in bodily punishment. For this reason also, a master saint never shows any miracle for attracting souls from mundane life for purposes of initiation. A student or disciple, however, sees any number of miracles at each move in this world or next after initiation. Sants neither dress themselves distinctly, nor bear or keep any mark, sign, or symbol with them. They do not say they are high of self, but mention their own masters. When told they are great, they reply that it is none of their doing. It is the kindness and mercy of their master. The master does not see who a person is, what position he holds, or to what school of thought or race he belongs. He simply sees that one coming to him is an ensouled human being, man. The sant is so watchful and alert, a merchant of his precious goods, that is, the spiritual science, that anybody who thinks himself the most clever, the wisest, the the most highly educated, a performer of miracles, etc., cannot get even the scent of what he has, though one may try his very best. The Sant loves theists as well as atheists, or even the worst sinners, or those who are drowned in sensual pleasures of the world, just as a loving mother will not throw away her child completely covered in dirt and filth. It takes a Sant to know a Sant. A Sant alone can describe a Sant. His presence in the midst of any society or social group is its most precious adornment. He may be seen going from one place to another, but he does not go there for any propaganda or selfish motive, but is attracted by the strong silken ties of love in certain hearts. He is the uplifting leader of moral cleanliness and spirituality. Whether a metal be gold or iron, it is mere metal to a Sant. He is not affected by offers of position, of dignity or indignity, honor or dishonor, nor moved by joys and sorrows, praise or censure. Sovereignty, wealth, and beauty of women are no attractions for a Sant. He is far above the influences of lust, anger, greed, attachment, and ego. He is unaffected. Sants, or sadhus, are above the three gunas. They are selfless and reveal the truth only. They are children of light, beacons of the world. It is very seldom that one comes across them, real ones. Like wrestlers, they are not made in one day, nor are they from any school of academic learning. They have had the experience of several past lives. Every saint has a past, and every sinner a future. They are common assets of humanity. They are experienced personalities who have analyzed themselves and realized God and can help to put us on the same path. Whatever one has, he can give it to another. How can the ordinary man know that a master saint, guru or satguru, visits the heavens daily, takes charge of his disciples' karma, winding it up and liquidating it under his care and supervision? There are thousands of disciples, and how can the master manage it? Man hears of these things only occasionally. Sit by a Sant, and you will feel mental composure, calmness, and a tranquility never experienced before, and much more too. The minds of those who have the least spark of love of God in them experience an awakening, even when they just hear that there is a master who can really guide them to the threshold. In going to a master, we acquire reciprocity of heart, staying still behind the eyes, and contact with the divine link. In the places of pilgrimage, the holy ones of olden times bestowed at least these three boons, which are stepping stones to direct spirituality. Words and theories have now been substituted for these prerequisites of the divine science. The teachings of the Sants are, in brief, the following. Man has valuable treasures of divinity hidden within him. Acquire the knowledge and experience that made the Masters so high and holy, and unlock the doors giving entrance into the divine in practice, not intellectually, right now, during your present lifetime. Purity of heart in a simple request is all that is needed. You have to pay nothing for this science of nature. Into the society of Sants come men of all characters, including those proud of their ideas, good or bad. Saints, however, do not employ police to keep away those who in the eyes of the public are undesirable. And the strange thing is that their own censure is the only doorkeeper that automatically keeps them away. The problem now before man is how to recognize and identify a true master from among so many he meets, hears, and reads about. We are used to seeing outwardly. There are hardly any universal or common marks on the person of a Sant. Still, we need some clues, some key. We may point out, rishis and munis are defined as those who possess knowledge of the past, present, and future. Yogis, in addition to that, have miraculous powers to exhibit and attract. Of gods, it is said, they do not cast a shadow. At least something must be said about genuine Sants and Sadhus by either the ancients or moderns. The reply is that for the ordinary layman and the negative-minded man, there can be hardly any indications that a man may be a Sant. For the slightly advanced on the path of love of God, and for those of astute observation, there can be given some hints and clues. Much patience is needed, however, to discover them. 1. Sants say that God is within man. This is emphasized and repeated everywhere today, so it is not a convincing clue for modern man. 2. The eyes and forehead of one genuine master bear a strange contrast and striking resemblance to another. This is realized by very few of those who have lived during the lifetimes of two such masters, and who have minutely observed these features or signs in their faces. It is, in fact, the one benign power working through two different human poles, one after the other, or even side by side, which is also the case occasionally. 3. They make visible or invisible three vertical veins on their foreheads at will. This remarkable sign by which a Sant can be recognized is mentioned by the ancients and is not discernible by many until they learn of it and desire confirmation by this means. 4. When sitting in the presence of a real Sant, even with open eyes, the sensory current of the body begins to convene, gather up, and rise involuntarily and unknowingly until felt. This experience is given by a Sant to a very few of the selected ones. Ancient seekers aware of this test of self have corroborated this. And 5. Sincere aspirants are given the experience of withdrawal of the spirit current at the very first sitting at the time of initiation. This is open to all coming under the protective fold of the Master. He may be a new disciple or an old one who comes to the Master to realize and correct any mistake under which he may be laboring. This experience is also open to those who received instructions from a self-styled master, in whom he has had faith, but from whom he has had no experience. That's all the time I have for tonight. I just read Sant the Master. It was published in the October 1970 Satsang Desh, and as Chapter 5 in The Way of the Saints. And there's some more remaining in this written passage the Master gave us. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, David, for reading Master's gracious, inspiring words. There were 57 participants at tonight's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you to our Divine Master for bringing us together to receive your loving guidance and blessings.
You say that at the feet of the Lord over it, we had the good fortune to have seen him with these physical eyes, moving on earth in all humility of saints and humility personified, showering his blessings all round to all who came to his feet.